got the gospel transmitting all day.
Have a seat. So, when I was thinking, when my daddy texted me, he did. He texted me last year, and I was like, no, I'm good. I'm good on that. And so this year, he texted me, and I said, sure. And so he said, cool, you're up. Now listen, to a lot of people, this doesn't seem like a big deal or a lot of pressure, but just understand from my heart, okay, this is my father's stage, okay? He's been preaching for over 30 years, longer than I've been alive, okay? Everybody out there, whether they say it or not, are here to compare whether I'm a preach like him or like my mama. It's a lot of pressure. He's got several years ahead of me. So I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, what am I going to preach? Maybe I'll preach about Hannah and the prayer that got her her promise. Maybe I'll preach about the woman with the issue of blood and the reach that got her her promise. Maybe I'll preach about Esther and the sacrifice that got her her promise. Maybe I'll preach about Job and the suffering that later got him his promise. And none of those seem to fit. So I looked at Sarah and Abraham. And, of course, it seems only fitting that I would preach on Sarah and Abraham, not just because they're awesome, but because my mother's name in Spanish is Sarah, and my father played Abraham in the Bible Experience. So it seems very fitting that I would preach about Abraham and Sarah. So let's talk. Abraham, in the beginning, is promised blessings that are going to overflow him. He is promised that he will have seed. He will have offspring. He's going to be great. He's going to be a wonderful man. He's going to have nations and nations and nations. His promises overflow exceedingly and abundantly indeed. Even Lot and Abraham had to separate because God had already exceeded their blessings. It was too much for them to stay together. They had to separate. And so when we go later on in the story of Abraham and Sarah, I relate so much to Sarah, not only because she battled with infertility, but because she did not have a full knowledge of what God had promised her husband. A lot of times we are promised an inheritance, not because of who we are, but because of who we have connected to. And so it is important in the story that I understand that Sarah is kind of like the side person in the story. When you think of Sarah, you automatically think of Abraham or Isaac, the promise. You never can really connect Sarah to Ishmael and Hagar. And so in between God saying that Abraham is going to be great and he's going to be awesome and he's going to have children and all of this wonderful stuff is going to happen to him, a whole city is destroyed. A whole city. How do I know? Very, very good question. Okay. And so I'm sitting and I'm reading the story of Sodom and Gomorrah, filled with sin, filled with faithless people who do not believe that God is the Most High God. And so Abraham is talking to God, and he is like straight up negotiating. Now, what is cool to me is that in the biblical days, people had so much access to God. They could talk to him. They build their altar. They sit and they have a conversation. This is the Lord that they're having a conversation with. So the Lord comes to him and he tells him, I'm going to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. I'm tired of them. They won't get it together. So I'm going to destroy them. Abraham's response is, well, if you just see 50 people, will you surely just save those 50 people and not destroy the whole city? And the Lord is like, well, yeah, if I find 50, I won't destroy it at all. And I thought to myself, he sound real confident that they ain't gonna find 50 people. And I think Abraham realized that as well. So he was like, okay, wait. Okay, what if it's just 40 people? And the Lord was like, well, okay, if it's 40 people, I won't destroy. I'm like, you are negotiating with God on these numbers. He gets all the way down to 10. And the Lord says, I will not destroy if I find 10 people. And you all know, and maybe you don't, Sodom and Gomorrah was destroyed, but God saved Lot and his family, all the people who did not look back. Why didn't he save Lot's wife? I thought to myself, like, he could have gave her a warning. He could have told her, like, don't look back again. You really on a quick edge right now. Don't look back again, okay? It's getting real salty in your life right now. But as soon as she looks back, without hesitance, without doubt, boom, she's a pillar of salt. Now, why is that interesting to me? Her husband did not look back. And when he got to his destination, he didn't mourn. Because I thought, okay, since he didn't look back, he don't know that his wife is a pillar of salt. So when he gets to his destination, he gonna be like, man, oh my God, shave my head, tear my robe, look. None of that happened. He continues moving on as if he didn't lose his wife. I tried to figure out why he didn't save her, and I find that if you allow what's behind you to become more important than the promise that God has ahead of you, then you will allow yourself to be destroyed before you get to your destination. It wasn't that she wasn't a good woman. It wasn't that she wasn't worthy of saving. He already saved her. It was her disobedience to the messenger of God that put her in a salty situation. So we have to understand the risk that happens when we look back. The risk that happens when we want to become consumed by the things that God is trying to destroy. Why was it hard for her to leave and go forward? Well, what is the problem? Why would you want to look back at something that you know is being destroyed? It will not come back. It's not going to be rebuilt. And everything that God has promised you, I mean her, is better than what's behind you. And so we're walking through, and Lot is saved. He got his kids, and he's not mourning. But that's not what I came here to talk to you all about. Just giving you a little history of what's happening in between Abraham being told he's going to have an offspring and the destruction that happened in between that. And so in the middle of Abraham receiving this information, this knowledge, in the middle of this, Hagar comes along. And she is a slave. So she has to yield and submit to whatever her mistress or master tell her to do. She cannot say no. But Abraham could. So Sarah is like really depressed. She's sad. She hasn't had a child yet. It's been years and years, 10 years. They've been in Canaan, and she has not had a child yet. Right before all of this happens, God tells Abraham, I'm going to bless you with an offspring. You're going to have a seed. When we go to the next chapter, Sarah is like, I'm not having a baby. Go ahead and sleep with Hagar. And I was really confused because I was trying to figure out why he didn't say, Sarah, I was just talking to the Lord, and he said that we're going to be blessed beyond measure. He said that we're going to have our own offspring, that I'm going to be the father of many nations. Why he didn't communicate with his wife about what the Lord had said? Because if he had communicated, she probably would have said, well, let's not sleep with Hagar then. She sends Hagar to Abraham, and Abraham agrees to this request. It made me wonder, what are our Hagars, our backup plans to what God has said? Had Abraham been walking by faith and had been walking in what God had told him, then he wouldn't have made a backup plan to what the Lord had said. Hagar and Ishmael are the backup plan. They are the distraction, the detour along the destiny, the destination. We all have a distraction, a Hagar, whether it be sickness, illness, computers, work, job. We have to understand that we cannot be so thirsty for a position that we forget the power that we have on the inside of us. Abraham was thirsty to jump ahead of God's will. He was thirsty to produce early. But what happens when you produce early fruit that you was not supposed to be messing with, that you was not supposed to be linked up with? What happens? He lays with Hagar, and she gets pregnant. Now look, this is women. As soon as Hagar gets pregnant, as soon as she had this baby, she is like walking around, girl, you ain't worthy. Ooh, you didn't have no baby. Ooh, don't you wish you was pregnant like me? She's treating her in contempt, is what the word says, which the definition of contempt is worthless, treating someone worthless. And so she is treating her with contempt. Sarah goes to Abraham and she's like, look, your side chick though, she is trying me. I'm not for it. Gotta figure this out. Now listen to Abraham's response. She your servant. Do with her what you will. You done laid with this lady. You done agreed to having sex with her. And now she's Sarah's servant? She's been serving you quite well. As far as I know, you've been served very well. When we throw away our responsibilities, we throw away our promise. When we give the option, the backup plan is you throwing away your promise. When you have a backup plan to what God said, it is saying, I believe you, but. When we say but, it erases everything that we said prior to. And so you cannot expect that good fruit is going to come from a seed that you planted. What you form will not prosper. For the hands that God creates with are prosperous hands. And so Sarah has thrown her promise away to Hagar. She has thrown it away and she's giving it up because she doesn't know what God said. And Abraham is allowing her to throw away her gift because he doesn't have an ear to hear what God said. It's very similar to Job. When I was reading Job and the messengers were coming and they were like, yo, you're going to be great. You're going to live long. You're going to have a lot of children. You have nations and nations of children. It's going to be okay. And he was like, no, I'm still sore. I'm still going through trouble. I'm still suffering. He missed what the messenger was saying. It's mean I'm doing my good preaching, y'all. He missed what the messenger was saying. How often are you missing what the messenger is saying? How often are you allowing yourself to be consumed by your struggle that you can't see success? How often do we allow ourselves to stay lame, broken, as people step over us over and over again, as Hagars produce fruit that belong to us? How often do we allow ourselves to be so consumed by the tests and trials of life that we forget that those come that we may be complete, so that we do not lack? In a world where people have become comfortable in lacking, the tests and trials are not what they desire, because you have become comfortable in a lacking state. When you have something great ahead of you and you know that it's going to take you from one place to another, why would you allow yourself not to go through the test? Sarah and Abraham was being tested. They were being tested to see if I wait to give them the gift, will they still believe me, or will they laugh? I've told them I'm going to give them promises. I told them that they're going to be great. I told them that everything's going to be okay. So when I come to confirm the promise, they should be prepared. They should be ready. They already know this is coming. They should be excited. This is going to be great. When I come and I send my messengers to tell them we are about to produce what I said, they're going to be excited. But they laughed. They laughed in the face of confirmation. They laughed in the face of the angels of the Lord. They laughed. How do we put ourselves in a position to respond to confirmation in laughter? When I was going to do my text, I was going to title it, Don't Laugh at Your Promise. And then the Lord switched it to, He's About to Make You Laugh. I'm trying to figure out why He's about to make you laugh, if it not be that you have forgotten what the Lord said. So when it finally comes, when the confirmation of destiny comes, you don't know how to receive it because you've been so lame. We do not take ownership of the storms that you have placed yourself in, because that would be too much like right. When we talk about the lame man, even in the face of Jesus, he did not take responsibility for why he didn't drag himself to that pool. Jesus came to him. He said, what's going on? Do you want to be well? Do you see how close the pool is? What's happening? What's going on? He responds and says, nobody will take me to the pool. Nobody will drag me to the water. I can't find any help. The lights are off. My bills are due. I don't have a job. I don't have a car. I don't know what I'm going to do. I have no children. Woe is me. Huh. How long are you going to be there? Because as you take your time trying to get out of your lame state, the world is moving. The world is happening, and you are missing out on an opportunity to be great because you want to be lame. It's too hard to work hard. Faith without works is dead, and I've become comfortable in the shadow of death. I've become comfortable in the dry bones. I've become comfortable in a sunken state. I've become comfortable in the bottom of the barrel because it's too hard to get to the top. And so because I do not know how to be responsible with the gifts God has given me, I tear people down who are trying. Because I am so upset that I have spent so much time whining and crying. When I see success, when I see someone making it, I condemn them. I throw my rocks because it's easier for me to tell you that you're wrong than for me to realize that I am as well. We do not walk in the word of God because we don't want to read it. If it's not readily available on Instagram or Twitter, it's not worth it. You wake up in the morning to acknowledge the Prince of Air before you acknowledge the Prince of Peace because you're in turmoil. So how can he be the Prince of Peace when you're in turmoil and you're in a storm? So we give credit to the enemy and try to get him to build castles, but credit to the enemy does not build castles. It builds chaos. So the chaos that you are standing in, my dear, I'm sorry, I hate to tell you, here's a nugget to take home. Sometimes it's you. Sometimes it's your inability to take ownership. Sometimes it's your disobedience. Sometimes it's your ear that's not hearing. Sometimes it's you. Until you are able to realize that it is you, you can't move forward. Going to consistently blame God for something that you are the blame for. He is a blameless God, a spotless God. However, as soon as we get into a storm, when we're in trouble, we reach out for God. When our children are in jail, we reach out to God. When the storms are heavy, we reach out to God. When we're in hate and in anger, we reach out to God. But when everything's good, as long as everything's good, we don't reach out to God. And we expect him to bless us when we have not blessed him. We expect him to rise up and make things happen when we stifle the spirit and the presence of God in churches because we are programmatic and things have to go by a schedule. And so, yes, God is in the midst, but he's not moving because no one has asked him to. What do we do? What do we do when we are infertile? When we're not producing, what do we do when we're trying to believe God, but all the things that are going on around us suggest that he's not there, he's not listening? What do we do when the pain becomes bigger than the purpose? When the pain becomes bigger than the promise? When the suffering is not worth? It's not worth the supply of the double portion that we get. What do? When we are consumed in our issue, what do? Well, Job worshiped. Let's see. Hannah prayed. Sarah laughed. They were rejoicing in the fire pit. I think that what we do when the suffering becomes bigger than our supply, when the suffering becomes bigger than our promise, what we do is begin to realize that it's not about us. Your suffering is not about you. Your suffering is something that you prayed for. Why? What? How do I know that? You ask God to build your faith and strengthen you, and he's going to test it. You can't get it without testing. I wish there was a way. I really do, because I am a little tired of being tested as well. However, there's no way to get to endurance. There's no way to get to not lacking. There's no way to get to your promise if you are not willing to go through the test and the trial. There's no way to do it. So here's the thing. You can sit and you can complain, and that's cool. That's fine. But you have to understand that you cannot be angry at those who have decided to move in their suffering. You cannot be angry at those who gave God a yes while you sit in your no. You can't. You cannot condemn those who are trying because you won't. You can't. You can't. You have not been given the privilege to do so. So you have to shift who you are. You have to shift your perspective. You have to shift your story. Ooh, Dad, this is going to be good. So the Bible says that if you believe you have received, then you shall have it. What's the last thing you received? Because this works both ways. If you believe you have received the report of the doctor, then you shall have it. If you believe that you have received what the enemy is planting, then you shall have it. We go into the doctor's office. The doctor says, "You have cancer." And you take that paperwork and you say, "Okay." And you walk out. And now you got cancer. And you're fighting. And you're sick. And you're tired. You received it. When the last time you told your doctor, "I don't receive that. I don't receive that. I know your test. I get it. But stripes that happen way before this test says that you a liar. That's what it said in the book. I'm not calling you a liar. I'm just saying that in the book, it says that no weapon formed against me is going to be able to prosper. And this happened way before cancer, way before diabetes, way before infertility. God already declared great and mighty works are going to be completed in me, so I don't receive that. A lot of times, you are suffering because of what you received. A lot of times, you are down and out because you had your hand open for something that you weren't supposed to catch. Sometimes the test is trying to see what quality you have. Wisdom, the definition of wisdom is the quality of experience. How do you expect to be wise without experience? You ask God for wisdom, he's going to give you the quality of experience. What kind of quality are you operating in? Poor quality, good quality, fair quality. What kind of quality are you operating in? What experience are you willing to go through? Because here's the thing, guys. Here's the thing. Nobody wants to hear from anyone that didn't go through anything.
and many others, we heard the teachings of Jesus.
Nobody wants to hear from anyone that didn't go through anything. It's true. You may have wonderful things to say. You may have a full monologue you got written out. It may be great. You probably studied yourself approved. But if you have not gone through anything, you can't help me. You can't help me because I'm in a tough spot right now. It's a mountain ahead of me. The storm is raging. The boat is shaking. I'm not sure if I'm going to make it. So I don't need you to come and tell me all is going to be well if you ain't never went through nothing. So if you want to have a story, you want to be on the platform, you want to preach like Bishop, you want to sing like the praise team, you want to do all of these wonderful things in the lights and the glam and the platform, what do you think God is going to build your platform with? What? You think this is fun? You think this is fun on the stage? These lights are hot. Okay? I feel like my collar is choking me. It's dangerous up here. It is. It's dangerous up here. And you want it because you don't understand the process. You want it because you don't understand the suffering. You want it because you don't understand what God did to bring this about. You want it because you didn't see Bishop painting walls and making chicken dinners. You didn't see First Lady on ladders and doing WIC and food stamps. You didn't see that. You want the lights. You want the platform. You don't want the process. So before you get jealous, let me tell you something about these lights. They are hot. They are painful. People will ridicule you. They will condemn you. They will curse you. They will say you are wrong. They will question your judgment, your doctrine. You will not be able to have many that say you're great. But if you want it, I don't want to deter them from the stage, Eddie. I don't want to do that. I just want you to have an understanding. I want you to have an understanding because a lot of us are spiritual pillars of salt. I want you to have an understanding that you can perish in the spirit and still be walking in the body. I want you to have an understanding that if you do not strengthen your spirit before you get up here, that you will come up here and you will fail. And then you will be mad. But the only person there is to be mad at is you. Stop blaming the church for your hurt. It's petty. It's petty and it's immature. The church did not hurt you. The people in the church hurt you. A lot of the people in the church were just simply holding you accountable, and you don't like being held accountable, and so now you're upset and you're mad and you're going to another church so that you can do what you want to do instead of being in the church under a good covering because you want to be able to do what you want to do. Everybody needs ministry, but the minute the pastor tells you something you don't like, I'm out of here. No, I can find another church. It's too big anyway. How big do you think heaven is going to be? You in your little storefront mentality, and that's why you can't grow, because you're not willing to look bigger than yourself. You're not willing to look beyond yourself. You're not willing to grasp exceedingly and abundantly. You don't want the work. You want the title. You want the privilege. You want the prosperity. You want the suits. You want the car. But with that comes specific responsibility. With that comes specific accountability. So if you do not want anyone to hold you accountable, don't get on the stage. It is important that you understand what you're asking for will never be given, because God is going to do exceedingly and abundantly above anything you could ever ask or think. And so if you're asking for something big already, you must expect that you're going to get bigger than that. And again, it comes with specific responsibility and specific accountability that some of you are not ready for. I was reading about David and Goliath, and the Lord said, they're not even in front of their Goliath yet, and they're breaking. He hasn't even brought you to your Goliath. You're still being conditioned with the lions and the bears and the sheep. You ain't even made it to Goliath yet, and you're already breaking. You can't handle the suffering you're going through now, and it's conditioning. What you gonna do when you get in front of Goliath? What are you going to do if you don't smooth your stone? What are you going to do if you don't learn how to fight the lion and the bear? David went to the king and he said, this is going to be just like fighting the lion and the bear. What would have happened had he never fought a lion and a bear? What would have happened had he not been conditioned off in the field with the sheep? You so mad that you off in the field with the sheep. You so mad that you gotta teach the sheep. You so mad that you gotta lead the sheep, ready just to be appointed. Well, he already anointed me. I should be good. There is a process that comes with the promise. There is a process that comes before you receive the promise. That's why I talked about Sodom and Gomorrah, because 10 years and Sodom and Gomorrah and Lot being rescued, all of that happened in between Sarah receiving the promise. There was a process that happened. And if you allow yourself to drown in the process, you cannot hear. You cannot hear. And if you cannot hear, then when the horn blows, if you have not become sensitive to the Spirit of the Lord, if you have not become sensitive to the voice of the Lord, then how can you hear a sound from the Lord? Everybody wants to hear one bishop preach, because God can't use nobody else but you, Daddy. Seriously, I'm telling you the truth. As children's ministry director here at the main campus of Dallas, when anyone else is going to preach, we watch parents come and take their children by the droves. Oh, Bishop ain't preaching? Nope, not gonna make it, not gonna make it. If you are so honed in to one sound, if you are so honed into one teacher, if you are so honed into one pastor, one bishop, then you never get to be fully grounded in anything else but what your will allow. I don't want to hear from nobody else. Who do you think you are? What would happen if a Peter comes walking past you? A Paul comes walking past you? A Jeremiah comes walking past you? If you only want to hear Bishop, if you only want to hear from Abraham, you don't get to meet Moses. You don't get to meet David. You don't get to meet Elijah. You don't get to meet Isaac. You don't get to meet anybody else, because you only want to hear from Abraham. You have to get it together, guys, because Jesus is coming back. And we don't have any more time for you to be lame. We don't have any more time for you to be in your pity party. It's been great. It's been great. I got an invitation to it, came. It was great, but it's over now. It's over now. You have to get up out of that sorrow. Get up out of that mourning. Get up out of that molestation and that rape that happened 30 years ago. Y'all kill me to death. Y'all kill me to death. You want God to give you something, but you won't let go of the stuff that's making you sick. You won't let go of that rape, that victim, that victim. Are you gonna be a victim forever? You're not never gonna produce? Well, I'm afraid of failure. You're not doing nothing. You're failing already. You're not doing anything. God's asking you to do something, and just as Jonah, you try to go in a different direction, and now you mad that you're in the bottom of the belly of the fish trying to figure out how you got here. You were disobedient. If you believe that God gave you a vision, a true vision, stand up. If you believe that God gave you a true vision, stand up. How can you believe that God gave you a full vision and not complete it? How can you believe that God gave you a full vision and he won't provide for it? How can you keep procrastinating what God asked you to do because you want to do your will? Well, I would do it this way. Well, I would do it this way. If God gave you a vision, you have to pursue it. And if you're not going to pursue it, stop complaining. Stop complaining. You have a vision, a purpose that God has set inside of you to pursue and to go after with all the zeal and tenacity you have. Do not let your rapist continue to rape you. Do not let infertility to continue to surround you. You're worth so much more than that. Sit down. Later, we go into the story, and we reach Abimelech. This is where we find out that Abraham is a liar. But it's okay, because he just lied because he was trying to protect his wife. But I still am a little confused, because Abimelech was the one that got in trouble. And he didn't do anything wrong. Abraham lied to him, told him, she my sister. He grabs her and says, okay, well, she gonna be my wife. And the Lord was like, you surely about to die. You about to be out of here. Wait, what do you mean I'm about to be out of here? What did I do? You gonna destroy me and I didn't even do nothing? Hear what I'm saying. That God was prepared to destroy Abimelech, and he did not do anything. They didn't get it. God was prepared to destroy Abimelech, and he did not do anything. Some of you are upset because you are in the process of destruction and you feel like you didn't do nothing. You feel like your hands are clean. But when you grab something that does not belong to you, to use it the way that you want it to be used, to gain it the way that you want it to be gained, you will surely perish. Without the knowledge and understanding that Sarah is someone else's wife, you will surely perish. It's not about the lie. It is about your inability to gain knowledge and hear the truth. If you keep putting yourself in a situation to not hear the truth, then how are you going to be able to grow? Some of the seeds that we have planted are toxic. Some of the seeds that we are nourishing and nurturing are that toxic seed. You keep going back to that relationship and back to that thing. And God's grace has been sufficient. But at what point do you stop looking at what you don't have? Asking God for what you don't have to the point where you haven't even thanked him for what you do. God told Abraham, you're going to have all of this stuff. And he was like, well, what's the good of having all that stuff and you ain't gave me a child yet? What? Thank you, Lord. You didn't have to give me anything. Thank you, Lord, for the blessing you say is coming and the blessing that I'm walking in. He already had too much. He already had too much. That's why he had to separate from Lot, because they had too much already. We never hear him say, thank you. We never hear him say, thank you for this. Thank you for what I already have. Thank you for saving Lot and them, because they may not be all the way righteous and you still save them. Thank you for providing a way of escape. Thank you. They don't want to say thank you, but that's all right. Thank you, Lord, because I could have died in that car accident, but some type of way you made it to where I didn't die. Thank you, because the doctor said that I had cancer, and some type of way you healed it. Thank you, because my lights were about to be cut off, and some type of way you provided a way for me to have financial overflow so I can take care of my bills. Thank you, because you gave me the vision, and you gave me the provision. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for the laugh. Thank you for the laugh. Abraham and Sarah, they get together, I guess, because we don't hear that neither. Abraham jumped in the bed with Hagar. We don't never hear him jumping in the bed or getting to know Sarah. He agreed and jumped right in that bed with Hagar. But when Sarah had a child, the Bible says, and just as God said, Sarah had a baby, had a son, named him Isaac. Just as the Lord said. Not that they became one, that they knew each other, but just as the Lord said. Are we in the wrong bed? Are you sleeping with the wrong wife? Have you become so consumed by the distraction that you don't see what God gave you? You're not trying to produce with what he gave you first. You produce with what he gave you second. I sleep with Hagar. I'll do that. I have a baby with Hagar. What did she think? What did Sarah think was going to come of that? You give Hagar to this man of yours. You give another woman to this man that clearly she didn't want him. She didn't want Abraham. Because if she had, she would have been happy after that pregnancy. But she was mad at Sarah. She was mad at her mistress. She wanted to leave her mistress because she gave her to Abraham. So I think it might be safe to say that Hagar was a raped mother. That Sarah was an infertile woman trying to hold on to a promise that she later produced. But I can't help but think on Mother's Day, there are some raped mothers in here. There are some women that couldn't say no. There are some women that had to give their body unwillingly for the sake of birthing something, anything. And then there's that infertile woman that sits by the raped mother and tries to smile, though it truly aches to sit by someone who produced when you can't. It's tough. Tough to trust God when it seems like he's raining more on the unjust than he is on the just. It's kind of tough to believe that God is going to do something when she's pregnant. I imagine that Sarah thought she'd be able to handle Hagar being pregnant. Otherwise, she wouldn't have given her to Abraham. She thought, okay, we'll start a family with her. It's gonna be fine. But it ached too much to see Hagar produce instantly with her husband, to birth a seed instantly, immediately. He slept with her, and then she's pregnant. How hard it is to watch your Hagar produce. How hard it is to sit back and try to figure out, how am I going to smile and be happy while this woman is walking around with her big belly? And the Lord said, I'm going to have a child. But they're laughing at me. They're making fun of me. They're ridiculing me. And even when I did receive the promise, they still made fun of me. They still ridiculed me. They still treated me bad. When I made it, and they still throw their rocks. They still hurt me. And I'm here. I had the child. Yeah, I laughed. I did, because it's been so long since he said I was going to birth. It's been so long since he said that business was going to come. It's been so long since he said I was going to have a husband. It's been so long since he said I was going to get the job. It's been so long since he said I was going to get the car. It's been so long since he said I was going to be healed in my body. It's been so long since he said I was going to be redeemed. It's been so long since he said no weapon formed against me shall be able to prosper. It's been so long since he said exceedingly and abundantly over anything I could ever ask or think. It's been so long. I'm trying to figure out how to make it when it's been so long. And I want to tell you I'm doing good, but I go home and cry myself to sleep because I see everybody else being blessed, and it's been so long. So I tell you that I'm okay. Got that mask on. That everything's good. I'm all right. I'm good. Oh, it's fine. It's wonderful. It's so exciting. Yay! But in the closet, in that dark place where anger and bitterness live, where sorrow and pain are ever present, where trouble seems to be my wardrobe, trying to figure out how to shake myself loose, trying to figure out how to get out of these chains, trying to figure out how did I end up here? How did I end up in such a dark place when God is supposed to be the light? How did I end up not being favored? It's because you've been operating in fake faith. It's because you're not believing all the way. It's because you are still holding on to that mustard seed. You haven't grown it, haven't planted it, haven't nourished it. Still holding on to that minimum requirement. Getting mad when the mountains come. Getting mad when the storms come. I trust God, but I believe God, but I know he can, but I know he's able, but I know he can do it, yeah, but when you lose your butt, when you lose your butt, there is a breakthrough that happens. When you begin to look at the enemy and roar, there is a breakthrough that happens. When you can stand in the face of your sorrow and say, though he slay me, yet will I trust him, there is a breakthrough that happens. You're receiving the enemy because you perceived him to be big. He is not a lion. He walks like a lion. He's not a lion. He walks like a lion. So really, he's like a cat. And you keep giving cats lion privileges. And so you are trying to figure out why it's not working out. You're consumed by this like a lion. Consumed by the weapons forming. Consumed by the infertile, dry place. Consumed by it's been so long. Consumed by the lameness. Consumed by the bondage. Consumed by the yokes of the enemy, because it's been so long. Whether you be an infertile person, because we all have levels in life where we could produce better, be better. Whether you have received the promise of Isaac or even have an Ishmael, whether you are there or not, there is a laugh that happens when God confirms you're going to get your promise. It's over. Your suffering is almost over. This time next year, you're going to get up out of this lame spot right now. And this time next year, we're going to see the production of your fruit. If you believe it, stand up. This time next year, I'm going to produce the fruit God promised me. This time next year, I'm going to have what thus saith the Lord. This time next year, I will not be...
It's gonna be all right.
So-
This is KAYT, Gina Alexandria.
No need to worry.
The gospel is on the radio at 88.1.